Welcome to NACSW's Podcast of the Month. Our podcast program makes available recordings of a wide variety of NACSW presentations and discussions on topics of particular interest to Christians in social work. Our Podcast of the Month program features a new podcast every 30 days for your listening pleasure. We hope you enjoy today's podcast.
This workshop is creating a compassionate organization through servant leadership. So if that's what you're looking for, you're in the right place. I am Houston Thompson, and I'm introducing our speaker. I also will be collecting the evaluation forms when this session is over and stamping the CEU books if you need the CEU credit. So it's my privilege to welcome Dr. Hugh Druin. He has led the largest department in the region and regional government, over 1,700 staff and a budget of $250 million. He's been doing that for over the last decade. And he has led the social service organization through major organizational shifts. And the department was recently designated by Excellence Canada as a world-class organization because of its excellence and innovation. So Dr. Druin has been an NACSW member for over 30 years and served on the board in the early 90s. So I think we are going to thoroughly enjoy our session this afternoon. So it's my privilege to welcome you, and it is all yours. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. It's good to be here. It's good to be in Atlanta. I've never been here before, so I toured the Coca-Cola plant yesterday. That was fun. Any Canadians here? No Canadians. That's good. A lot of what I'm going to talk about today is contained in this booklet, and it's available for you. I've got copies for everyone. So it's there. So on your way out, feel free to choose one. I wrote it for my department, and it's a lot of the things I'll speak about. There's even more detail for you. So that's you. So, let me begin by reading a piece of scripture.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Of course, it's the famous scripture on servant leadership. Jesus called them together and said, "You know that the rulers of the Gentiles lorded over them, and their high officials exercised autonomy over them. Not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to be great among you must be your servant, and whoever wants to be first among you must be your slave. Just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many." So although servant leadership officially has come into organizational development and management and leadership in the last 20 or so years, we know as Christians and as followers of Jesus that servant leadership is over 2,000 years old. So, this afternoon, what I'm going to do is take you on a journey. I know you just had lunch and fall asleep. But if you do fall asleep, that's okay too. I'll take you on a journey, some music, some story. We heard about, so some of you who were at Michael's session, we heard about storytelling. I'm going to give you some story about my own journey through management and leadership over the years. I've been in leadership positions since I was 26 years old. All in secular organizations, and all as a Christian. So it's an interesting journey. So we're going to do some storytelling, some music, and some principles that I'll share with you. And all this, and after that, we're hopefully near the end, we'll have some opportunity for some questions as well. So enjoy the journey. Relax, take it easy. Parker Palmer wrote this: "Deep speaks to deep, and when we have not sounded out our depths, we cannot sound the depths of our students' lives, our clients' lives, And if you're a manager or leader in an organization, your staff's lives. So what does that say to us as servant leaders, as leaders in an organization, or as people who aspire to leadership? It means that we never give up deepening our inner life. A leader who does not have a deep inner life is really handicapped in terms of leading others. Someone once told me, and it's so true, that you can't take others further than you are yourself. And I really believe that. So leaders are continuously growing, continuously developing, especially their inner life. It's really important. 2 years ago, I graduated from the Hayden Institute. It's an organization out of Southern California in spiritual direction. And I really enjoyed those 2 years because it helped me to get in touch with a lot of the things in my inner life that I had neglected over the years because you get so busy in leadership. You get so busy when you're leading a big organization. It was great. It was really nice. Just want to introduce this song a little bit. It's called Higher Ground. It's a song that was written for Barbara Streisand some years ago when she was struggling to find her way. And the song has always spoken to me because it speaks about leading our lives to higher ground, leading our organizations to higher ground. And she speaks in the song, or she sings, about losing her way. And in this day and age, in organizations, there's a lot of pressure on us as leaders. There's a lot of pressure that's, forces us to lose our way sometimes. But as Christians, we need to rediscover our way, because if we lose our way as Christian leaders, we can't be effective in leading others. So it's a song that really reminds us of really our responsibility as servant leaders, as Christian leaders, is to bring others and organizations to a higher ground.
Horizon, let the sun's light warm my face.
So job one as a Christian leader, as a servant leader, is to take the hearts of our staff to higher ground, is to take our organizations to a different place, to a higher place. And that, my friends, is a really, really important responsibility and calling. Our organization in November of 2012, as Dave introduced, as Houston mentioned, was honored by Excellence Canada, which is an organization in Canada that encourages the excellence in the profit and also in the corporate sector. And it's sponsored by the Governor General of Canada. So it's quite an organization. In our organization in 2012, after a decade-long journey of excellence, was honored with the Level 4 Gold Medal, which means it's the highest level that you can have, and it also rates us or brings us to a higher level in the sense that it makes us a world-class organization. Now, I'm not saying that because I was the leader during that decade, because it was a lot of people involved. Basically, I'm saying that to you because in our organizations, this decade-long journey, if you want, to excellence was built on four pillars. And I will talk to you briefly about these four pillars that were at the bottom or that held our organization together. Any sound structure, any sound building has to have some pillars. And ours is no different. But essentially, leadership is about relationship. It's about people. And some of us, some of our organizations still don't get that. Even Christian organizations. My first pillar is a pillar of care. Whenever we have the opportunity or responsibility to influence the thinking and the behavior of others, the first choice we are called to make is whether to see the moment through the eyes of self-interest or for the benefit of those we are leading. I like what Ken Blanchard and Phil Hodges wrote in this little book called The Servant Leader some time ago. And I'll read you an excerpt from it. The journey of life is to move from a self-serving heart to a serving heart. You finally become an adult when you realize that life is about what you give, not what you get. Every day, leaders face hundreds of challenges to their intentions. Our adversary is waiting every day to get us to be ego-driven, to be self-serving. Every day, and I like this, every day we must recalibrate our hearts. Isn't that beautiful? Every day we must recalibrate our hearts. You'll never be able to say, now I'm a servant leader, and I'm never going to be self-serving. We're all going to be grabbed off course by our egos. Just ask yourself, how am I going to do today? Am I going to be self-serving, or am I going to be a servant leader? A couple of years ago, I served on a board of the CEO of McLean's Food, a big food manufacturer in Canada. I think they're international. And it was interesting what he said. He said, before some serious reflection on my life and career, I had no understanding of the power of kindness. I was the CEO, and I was going to get this company where it should be. Now, he said, I've realized something else. He said, I realized that you can't lead if you don't love. You can't lead if you don't care. For a very profound statement from a CEO, a very prominent CEO. The second pillar that holds our organization is the pillar of excellence. The world is moved by highly motivated people, by enthusiasts, by men and women who want something very much in and believe very deeply. When we raise our sights, strive for excellence, dedicate ourselves to the highest goals, we're enrolling in an ancient and meaningful cause, the age-long struggle of humans to realize the best that is in them. See, you and I need to matter for something or for someone. You and I need to matter for someone. Michael was saying today that we age better, we live longer, if we have a sense of purpose. And it's true, we need to matter. But in our organizations, when we're the leaders, we need to ensure that our staff matter, that our staff are important, that our staff are valued. Last week, the Kingston Penitentiary, which is a federal penitentiary in Canada, closed. It was on the newscast, and it was built in 1836. And you haven't changed much since then. I had the privilege of being the first chief psychiatric social worker in the Kingston Penitentiary from 1974 to 1980. This is where I learned my first and lifelong lesson in leadership. Because I went in there thinking that I would fix them. I would fix them. I was 26 years old. I had an MSW and I had a specialty in group therapy, and I was going to go in there and I'm going to fix them. And I did my first group therapy, and I planned it, and I thought, this is going to be cool. This is going to be a great, great, great group session. And I gave it all my gave it all I had. I went in there. They all walked out on me. Nine men. They all walked out on me. And I thought, what's wrong with them? Problem was me, not them. I had to get a coffee really badly. So I had, in those, if you've ever watched movies about Alcatraz, you know, the Kingston Penitentiary looked like Alcatraz. So you walk, to get a coffee, I had to get guards to let me in to the what we call the cell block, or cell range, to the other end, where there's another set of guards that let you out to the coffee machine, and then you do the same thing coming back. So the guards let me in, and I was going to get my coffee. And one of the inmates from the group called me in. There's cell blocks, the cells were all open. They're 10 by 10. There's a toilet in the corner, and a chair, and a bed. That's about it. So I sat on the edge of the bed, and he sat in the chair, and he said, Hugh. I said, yes. He had a captive audience. I wasn't going to go anywhere. He said, do you want to know why we walked out of here? Well, sure, I wanted to know. But I said, yeah, sure. Shoot, tell me why. He said, Hugh, we walked out on you because you think you're better than we are. Mm-hmm. Hugh, we walked out on you because you think you're better than we are. Wow. That is a lesson, folks, that I'm glad I learned when I was 26. It was a powerful lesson. He was absolutely right. Mm-hmm. Given a different set of circumstances, I could have been on the other side of the Mars. And I know that. So a true servant leadership doesn't walk in front of their people or behind their people. They walk along with the people. They walk hand in hand. That's how you do it, because you're no better than anybody else. You're on the same journey. We all share a journey together. Yes, we share different gifts, we share different strengths, and that's the beauty of it. And that's what, in our organization, what excellence is all about. It's all about people. The third pillar is the pillar of learning. Learn all your life. Learn from your failures. Learn from your successes. And when you hit a spell of trouble, ask, what is it trying to teach you? We learn from our jobs, from our friends, from our families. We learn by accepting the commitments of life, by playing the roles that life hands us, not necessarily the roles who you would have chosen.
We learn by growing older, by suffering, by loving, by taking risks, by bearing with things we can't change. You know, that's so true. And as a servant leader, as a Christian leader, you never stop learning. You never stop growing. I read this little thing one time that somebody wanted on their epitaph. You know, I never grew up and I never stopped growing.
Mm-hmm.
I like that one. There's a little kid inside of me. I never grew up. But learning is continuous. It never stops. And it happens when we're joyful. It happens when good things are happening in our life. But it particularly happens when we're in the valley. It particularly happens when we go through incidences of suffering. So, 15 years ago, there was suffering in my family. My wife was diagnosed with breast cancer. And my children, who had been traveling quite a bit, fortunately were all around. And we found out about it. I came home. We had planned a trip to France, our first trip, because it was our 25th anniversary. And we didn't know at that point. She didn't know anymore. She just knew she had it. She didn't know if it had spread or how serious it was. And our kids all came home. And I remember as if it was yesterday, we sat on the floor. And we shared stories about what it was like when we were growing up. We shared what it was like to maybe lose a mother, a spouse. And we laughed, but we also cried together. And I thought we were close as a family. But my goodness, close. After that, we were close. Yes, we were close after that. Someone said, you quickly forget the people that you laugh with. But you never forget the people that you cry with.
That's right, never.
Never forget the people that you cry with. And that's so true. Albert Camus, French philosopher, wrote this. In the midst of my winter, I learn that there is within me an invincible summer. In the midst of my winter, I learn that there is within me an invincible summer. That's what we want to do as servant leaders, is to find the invincible summer that's present in each of our staff. The story ended well for us. My wife had normal radiation and chemotherapy and so on and so forth. And she's still with us today, thank goodness. But what an experience, I tell you. What an experience. The fourth, of course, pillar in our organization is the pillar of leadership. Leadership is a gift we offer others to make their work life healthier, more purposeful and meaningful. For this reason, leadership must spring from a deep place inside of us. This interior place must constantly be nurtured if we want our leadership to remain life-giving and a healing force for others. See, it's not about me. It's about we. That's what leadership is all about. It's not about me. It's about we. And I said earlier, we can only bring people as far as we are ourselves. I read a few years ago about a French-Canadian woman in Quebec who at 60 years old was looking for a purpose. She was kind of drifting. And she found out that there might be some opportunities in Rwanda to work with some of the women there, some of the widows in Rwanda, because if you remember, the Rwanda genocide, a lot of the men were killed, and that left a lot of widows. And so she said, well, what can I do? You know, she wasn't all that educated. She had never worked in that capacity before. But she said, maybe these women need a couple of things. She did know about microfinance. She was very good at that. And she was a good listener. So she went to Rwanda on her own money and began to work in ministry there. And that she did two things. She listened to them.
That's the first thing she did. She listened to them while they told her the story, the horrible stories about their husbands being killed and their families being killed. She learned to listen. And through listening to them, they began to be healed. They began to get better. And as they got better, she taught them microfinancing so that they could start their little businesses and support themselves. This was a woman that had never done anything like that before. But what a servant leader. What a servant leader. Going to Rwanda and working with the widows in Rwanda. So let's get to servant leadership. What is servant leadership? Well, aside from Jesus, who was our first servant leader, of course, it was conceptualized by Robert Greenleaf. And it's been adopted. Robert Greenleaf worked for AT&T for 40 years. And from 60 to 85, he conceptualized servant leadership. And he wrote books about it. He wrote articles. Strangely enough, generously enough, for as we remember, he never copyrighted. He didn't copyright a lot of his work. He gave it away for people. And it just kind of stayed there. And about 20 years ago, organizations, not-for-profits, churches, and corporate sector as well, got on to servant leadership. But really, it's not a new fad in leadership. It's not a new way of doing leadership. It's a way of being in the workplace. It's a way of being. And that's really important. Very, very important. Let me tell you another story about being in the workplace. The importance of being. Some years ago, I have three children, two daughters and a son. And my son's godparents, two Dutch men and a French-Canadian woman, were on their way from Ottawa to Toronto. Was about maybe 4 or 5 hours drive. And they were hit by a transport truck head-on. She died instantly. And Peter was seriously hurt and in the hospital. And I tell you, I couldn't. I was immobilized. I couldn't go to the funeral. I couldn't go visit Peter. I just didn't know what to do. And I was giving a seminar around that time. And one of the seminar participants wrote me this little note at the end of the seminar when I was struggling with all this. And he wrote me this. He said, "Hugh," and I quoted from Henry Nouwen. So he said, "Your quote from Henry Nouwen about the courage to enter the suffering of others fit with some of the things that happened to me lately, which I want to share with you." He said, "When I was 10, my 3-year-old brother was killed by a train. That day, a man was passing through town, and he came to visit and said that when he was 10, he had lost a younger brother. I just recalled that about 2 weeks ago. It came to mind. First, I thought how amazing it was that God had that person there at that time." He said to me, "Thanks for sharing with us. I and some friends will pray for you that you find the courage to go visit your friend." And then he's got a little note at the bottom here. He said, "Oh, and I should add, when I went home last night, my wife had given me a gift. A picture of my little brother Ross was on the wall. Yesterday was his birthday."
Wow.
Powerful note.
Yes.
Well, that gave me the courage to go visit my friend. I went to visit my friend. And my friend was very tall, 6'3", tall Dutch person. And he had a wonderful laugh, wonderful laugh. As soon as I walked into his house, he gave me a big hug. And he opened the bottle of wine. And he gave me some wine. And we sat, and we laughed, and we cried. And we laughed, and they cried some more. So we never forget the people that we cried with. But what was very significant about that visit was what he said when I was about to walk. I was about to leave that way. I turned to him and I said, "Peter, I'm so sorry I didn't come to the funeral. I'm so sorry I didn't come to visit you in the hospital." I said, "I didn't know what to do." He said, "Hugh, I didn't want you to do anything. I just wanted you to be with me. You see, we forget that our presence makes a difference. It makes a huge difference. And we always want to do when all we have to do sometimes is be, not do. So being is very important. So servant leadership is all about being. A definition of servant leadership: do those serve grow as persons? So good servant leaders grow their people. Did they, while being served, become healthier, wiser, freer, more autonomous, more likely themselves to become servants? And what is the effect on the least privileged in society? Do they benefit, or at least not be further deprived? Every day, we must recalibrate our hearts to become servant leaders. So there's 11 principles of servant leadership that I want to share with you. They're all in the booklet, and those of you who are interested in going into more detail can look at that. But the first principle is the principle of listening. And I don't know any author who has written so beautifully about listening than Henry Nouwen.
Yep, that's awesome. Yep.
When someone listens to us with real concentration and expresses sincere care for our strengths, struggles, and our pains, we feel that something very deep is happening to us. Slowly, fears melt away, tensions dissolve, anxieties retreat, and we discover that we carry within us something we can trust and offer as gift to others. A simple experience of being valuable and important to someone else has tremendous recreative power. That would be listened to is the most important gift. To listen to someone, to listen to our staff, is the most important gift we can get. I know that all of you know the work of Jack Canfield, the chicken soup guy. I've studied with Jack. And he's fond of saying the most important thing a leader can do is increase the self-esteem in their staff. And that's so important. That we breathe life in our staff. That we breathe life into others. Listening doesn't have to take an hour. When someone comes across, and I always have my door open. It's kind of a pain sometimes because I can't get my work done. But people come in, and they may only want to talk for 5 minutes. But I want to listen to them because I never know what they've gone through. We never know the secret pain, the secret struggles that people might be walking into work with. And so listening is really important. It's the most important gift we can give as leaders. My most probably powerful experience of being listened to, and fortunately I've had many, and it's been a real blessing. God's grace is wonderful, you know. But I was in a workshop with Jean Vanier about 15 years ago. And for those of you who don't know who Jean Vanier is, he was the son of the Governor General George P. Vanier, who was the Governor General in Canada in the 60s. Jean Vanier went to Trolley, France, and started homes for developmentally handicapped adults. And the homes called L'Arche, the Ark, spread all over the world. Now they've got something like 200 homes all over the world. He was a very close friend of Mother Teresa. So he was in that league, if you want to think about it that way. But there were about 200 people in that conference, and he offered anybody who wanted to spend some time with him to come, but he'd only have about 5 minutes. And so about 50 people decided to go, and I was in line. And I must have been maybe the 20th, the 21st person, I don't recall. But as I sat there in the room facing him, and if you know Jean Vanier, he's very tall and he's very lean, and he has old boots and jeans, and that's how he dresses. And that's great. He's a modern-day saint, I really do believe that. He just sat there, and it was like nothing in the world existed but me. I was the most important person in the world for me at that point. It was amazing. Those 5 minutes were just the most amazing time that I had being listened to. It was totally focused. I want to go see the Jimmy Carter Library, because Jimmy Carter has always been one of my favorite people. But he used to say there are two kinds of loves in the world. Love of God and love for the person that happens to be standing in front of me. That's what Jimmy Carter wrote. Not bad for Canadian, eh? The second principle, servant leadership, is empathy. It's only with the heart that one can see rightly. What is essential is invisible to the eye. One of my favorite authors, Mark Twain, the same thing, Saint-Exupéry. I'm French Canadian. I love to read French authors. He wrote a little book too, called Wind, Sand, and Stars. I love the title of this book. Wind, Sand, and Stars. And in it, he said this. He said, love doesn't come by looking at each other. Love comes by looking together in the same direction. Love doesn't come by looking at each other. Love comes by looking together in the same direction. That's what empathy is. The third principle is the principle of healing. Healing in organization and in life is made up of three components: faith, hope, and compassion. These are really important in organizations. They're really important for servant leaders. Because, folks, there's a lot of loneliness in organizations today. There's a lot of pain. There's a lot of people that don't feel valued. There's a lot of people that don't feel a sense of belonging. Whether they're Christian organizations or not, sometimes Christian organizations are worse than secular organizations.
Yes.
And that pains me. It doesn't have to be that way. There's got to be healing in organizations. And it's got to be based on faith, hope, and compassion. What's faith? It's the capacity to feel and see what is invisible, something that really matters. Of course, as Christians, we know what faith's all about. We know that we have to have faith in our Lord to be able to go on. But we need to get to translate that faith to people, not by wearing it on our shirt sleeve, but by becoming more Christ-like, by becoming more love. Becoming love in the world doesn't have to mean you preach at every time. I'm in a secular organization. I can't preach. But I can live it. And folks, sometimes that's more important. So that's what faith's all about. So Nelson Mandela, 27 years in prison. My goodness. Apartheid is gone because of Nelson Mandela. Martin Jr., Martin King, Martin Luther King Jr. I mean, you know, you'll see it. The Ebenezer Church, hopefully tomorrow. What a man of faith, what a man of, you know. Organizations need that kind of faith. They need that hope. And what is hope? It's desire to do more and to be more with our lives. Do you know that our staff in our organizations want to be more and do more with their lives? They want to be more and do more. But they hit their heads against a bureaucratic wall all the time. In my organization, it's a huge bureaucracy. But I do it and I ask for permission later. And so far, it's worked. Because if you knock your head so long on a bureaucratic wall, you lose hope. And people in organizations today need hope. They need faith. They need hope. And thirdly, they need compassion. Viktor Frankl, Viennese psychiatrist who was interned in a concentration camp at Auschwitz during the Second World War, wrote this. He said, "Knowing that we are here with a special task or mission to accomplish is what fills our lives with hope." And compassion, the Latin root for compassion,
means to breathe life into others.
Isn't that beautiful?
Compassion means to breathe life into others. I need to recalibrate my heart every day when I go into work so I can breathe life into others. Because they need it. I need it. They need it. Our organizations today are struggling. And they need people, leaders, servant leaders, who can live compassion, who can become love in the world, can become love in organizations, who can breathe life into others. I love this expression, to breathe life into others. And what happens when an organization has that kind of healing, finds that kind of healing? They're a lot more productive. We don't have to worry about production. I always say to my staff, don't worry about your clients. We're going to worry about you, then you can worry about your clients. There was a book that was written some years ago. It was called The Client Comes Second. Not a very social work title. The Client Comes Second. Wow, what is this? The point the author was making was that if you put your staff first, you don't have to worry about your clients. They're going to be looked at. But if you don't put your staff first, if your staff are burning out, then you got a problem. You got a big problem. I did research a few years ago for my doctoral thesis on the relationship between burnout, stress, and social support in organizations. And I found very clearly that the most important person in an organization is your immediate supervisor. See, people don't leave the organization, they leave the supervisor very often. That's what happens. And that supervisor, their score was so high, it was even rated higher than their immediate family in terms of their influence on their staff. Now that influence, think about it, that influence can be very positive or it can be very negative. Next Friday, I'm meeting all my management staff. I've got 165 of them. And my message will be, we want to care for you because we want you to care for your immediate supervisors and your staff. That's really important. Really, really important. So awareness is the fourth principle of servant leadership. Where it can be a place of growth where we're stretched to accomplish what we never thought we could. Awareness is developing a type of nurturing, a nurturing workplace where people can be stretched. You know, someone said, when our souls and our lives have been stretched, they never go back to their original dimension. Once we've been stretched, we never go back to our original dimension. I think it's very true. It's very true. So what's our responsibility as servant leaders? Is to be stretched. Go take a workshop. Go take a course. You know, pray. Take spiritual direction. Do what you can to stretch yourself. Because you'll be a bigger person. And the bigger you are, the bigger the people around you are going to be. Someone told me recently, you become like the five people that you most hang around with.
Amen.
I believe it. Mm-hmm. So someone in the audience, I sat down with them and said, yeah, well, what if it's my mother? My response was, well, do Easter and Christmas. And the rest of the time, if your mother doesn't change it, if she brings you down all the time, you see her, you've got a problem. We become like the five people we most hang around with. Very important. Very important. The fifth principle of servant leadership is persuasion. The journey of life is to move from a self-serving heart to a serving heart. You finally become an adult when you realize that life is about what you give rather than what you get. Persuasion. You see, persuasion is always gentle and respectful. Boy, some of my management staff need to learn that. I've got a director that she wants to use a baseball bat all the time. Mm-hmm. I keep saying that. You don't have to. You know, mellow. Be gentle. Your staff are, you know, we did a staff engagement survey 2 years ago. She had the lowest staff engagement survey of all the, of
all the, my departments. I've got six departments. So I've been working with her since then. Last week, praise the Lord, she came in and said, I think I need some coaching. So we're going to get her a coach right away. I think she's workable. I think there's potential there. You know, you don't use a baseball bat. You don't need to. People want to be treated with respect. They want to be valued. They want a sense of belonging in organizations. So servant leaders use persuasion well, not to manipulate, not to coerce, but to be respectful. And to share with someone, to ask someone, to see in someone, to say with people. I think it was Margaret Wheatley who said that. I can't remember now, but she said, see your staff in the way they could be, not in the way they can be. See them as they could be, and they won't disappoint you. And that's so true. I found that so true. When you have a vision for your staff and you see them, and it's true with kids too, in school, there's a lot of research about that. If the teachers treat their kids with respect and they say, hey, you can do it, you're going to be something. You're going to be something with your life. You're going to do something. They're not going to disappoint. They're going to do it. It's the same thing in organizations. Same thing. Conceptualization is the sixth principle of servant leadership. The servant leadership is not only concerned about short-term objectives, but is able to think beyond today's problems and imagine the future potential of the organizations. Today's problems will always try to crowd out the hope and the faith and the healing in organizations. Problems will crowd it out. We have to look beyond the problems. You know, we have a big God. We always say, God, we have a big problem here. What can you do with it? You should speak to the problem and say, problem, I've got a big God. You get rid of that problem. Conceptualization is looking beyond the problems in the organization. It's that recognition in organizations. Like, they are the Chaldean used to say that. It's to get in touch in organization with that great hope that we have in common. And what's that great hope that we have in common in organizations? Well, we want to belong. We want to succeed. We want to use our strengths. We want to use our gifts. We want to contribute as staff members, as leaders. We want to come home at night feeling that, boy, we've been stretched. We've had an opportunity to grow. And if we don't do that, we're wasting a third of our lives, because that's what we spend at work. 8, 9 hours a day, 10 hours a day. That's what we spend at work. What a tragedy if work doesn't make a positive difference in our lives. So what do servant leaders do? They create a culture where that can happen, where people can grow, where people can be stretched, where people can be different. People can go to higher ground. That's what servant leaders do. That's our responsibility as servant leaders. The seventh principle of servant leadership is foresight. The best leaders, like the best music, inspire us to see new personalities. A foresight is drawing the map, if you want. That's the map. And there's more about foresight in your booklet. Stewardship is the eighth principle of servant leadership. Very important one. People, relationships, values, and beliefs are most important to a corporation and, fittingly, the most fragile components. How many organizations go down because of technical problems as opposed to people problems?
Titanic. Titanic.
Titanic. Yes, that's one.
But the that exception that proves the rule.
It started with a technical problem, though. It started with a people problem.
Yeah.
It started with a people problem, because they could not agree on how strongly to build it. There was one man who wanted to build it even stronger, and the other man said, no, we got to save some money. And there was a conflict there. There was a relationship problem, and that's why the Titanic went down. That's why a lot of organizations go down, because there's bitterness, there's backbiting.
Christian or not, doesn't matter. And that, so it starts small, it might start with two people, it might start with three people. All of a sudden, it's a cancer that grows in the organization. Stewardship is looking after the people, after the relationships, after the values and our beliefs. So when there's backbiting in our organization, I take them back to our four pillars. I say, do you remember about care? Do you remember about excellence? Do you remember about learning? Do you remember about leadership? And we do this. We have what we call leadership circles in our organization. And in leadership circles, we remind each other of these servant leadership principles, and we remind each other of these pillars. Very important. The ninth principle of servant leadership is commitment to the growth of people. People will only grow and develop in the work situation if the culture of the organization allows it. My vision for my life and my work is people are precious. Do you have a vision as a leader for your life? If you don't, write now. And look at it 2 or 3 times a day, because it helps you to recalibrate your heart every day. So that's my mission, my vision. My mission is to be an instrument of transformation in individual and corporate life by sharing my spiritual depth, my knowledge, my experience through teaching, writing, and through my daily interactions with others. So my mission is to be an instrument of transformation. So you have a vision. The vision is always short. People are precious. My mission is to be an instrument of transformation. It takes your life to a higher level if you have that. I can guarantee you that. Building community in the workplace. That's the 10th principle of servant leadership. We hunger for community in the workplace and a great deal more productive when we find it. To feed this hunger is to harness energy and productivity beyond imagining. So I was mentioning that the way we're building community in our workplace right now is 4 years ago we created leadership circles. And leadership circles means that you're in a circle, usually we meet outside of work, and the leadership circles, you're not meeting with your immediate supervisor and you're not meeting with someone in your immediate work area. You're meeting with someone from another area. And the leadership circles are 9 to 10 people, and they have 2 facilitators. And we train the facilitators, and they meet about 3 or 4 hours a month. And basically what it is, it's an oasis in the desert. It's a place where people can come and say, you know, I'm not feeling very good about work right now, or I have a struggle at home, or I have an issue here. And they can talk about it openly without any reprimand. You know, and every fear of reprimand or fear of a supervisor or something like that. So they come in there. And it's been amazing what's happened. People have just gathered more energy in the workplace. They can give more to their clients. They can give more to each other because they found the oasis. They can come and drink once a month. They can come and drink. They can have their hearts recalibrated. That makes a big difference. It's a huge difference. It's a huge difference. The last principle of servant leadership is the principle of legacy. I got to tell you that one of the most important things you're going to do as a leader is leave a legacy. The most important thing you're going to do in your family is to leave a legacy. About 15 years ago, I was on the edge of burnout. I was one of these type A's. I'm about an A minus now. But I was really working, burning the candles at both ends, as the expression goes. So I said, I got to do something here. So I went to a Jesuit college and did a 10-day silent retreat. Well, after 3 days, I thought I'd go crazy. Where's my cell phone? Where's my BlackBerry? You know, there's no cell phone, no BlackBerry, no television, no phone, nothing on there. The only thing you're allowed to bring is a Bible. But you know what? After 3 days, I started to celebrate. I started to realize that I have an inner life. And I started to realize about the importance of nurturing my inner life. And I noticed the importance of people in my life that I wanted to nurture, that I wanted to grow, that I wanted to be with. So I wrote a letter to my three kids, my two daughters and my son. And the letter goes something like this. I want to share it with you. It's called a letter. And it goes, my dear children, your mother and I are about to celebrate another milestone in our relationship. We've been together for more than a quarter century at that time. Remember, we were all together 2 years ago when your mother and I celebrated our 25th anniversary by renewing our vows. This was such a difficult time for our family as your mother was just recovering from breast cancer. We had all realized in our own private way from going through this family pain together how very precious life is. Again this year, as we have done so many years before, your mother and I will go out together for a special dinner to celebrate our ongoing commitment to each other. We're more aware now than ever how each minute together is a gift, now that death has knocked on our door. During dinner, we will share our love for each other, but also our love for each of you. We will recall how it was when you were growing up. I remember going in each of your bedrooms when you were sleeping and letting my mind and prayers touch each of your futures. I tried to envision the young woman and man you would become. I tried to see in my mind's eye the friends you would choose, the persons you would marry, the personalities you would grow to develop, the type of relationship I would have with each of you. The three of you have grown to be such extraordinary persons. You have more than met my fondest dreams for you. I am humbled and deeply grateful that God allowed me a part in the formation of your promising lives. Standing in your doorway these many years ago that now seem like only yesterday, I watched your tiny body sleep. I remember how I was driven to pray out of fear and self-doubt that I would not be the father that each of you needed. There are so many feelings and thoughts that crowd my mind as I write these words, all rooted in my burning love for each of you. I cannot possibly adequately express them all. I want you to know I wanted to be a good father with all my heart and soul, although I'm painfully aware how often I fell short. I also want you to know that your mother and I tried to teach you how to live life more fully and with greater love, despite our own imperfect ways. Did we teach you that life is both painful and joyful, and that hidden in your pain are many lessons that will show you the way to greater compassion in your lives, which will lead you to deeper experiences of joy? Did we teach you that no matter how much darkness surrounds you, to never let it extinguish the light that is in you? Did we teach you to nurture your inner flame through quiet reflection, through giving and receiving, through times of laughter and through times of tears? Did we teach you to stand firm for what you believe, while being open to learn from and to deeply respect those who believe differently? Did we teach you the importance of humility and prayer, so that you realize that you're not the center of the universe, and that it's okay not to have all the answers and to ask for help? Did we teach you to appreciate your inward beauty and to fill your life in gratitude with all you have and will receive? Did we affirm you enough so that you will now have the courage to let your beauty shine so others can use your life as a mirror to see their own beauty? Did we teach you that you are unique and that you have, and what you have to offer the world cannot be offered by anyone else but you? Did we teach you to reach for the stars and to never give up on your dreams? did we teach you to remain, to retain your passion for life and your compassion for both friends and foe, despite your doubts, your fears, your disappointments, and your hurts. I want you to know that we will love you whatever happens in your lives, because family, however imperfect it is, still has the power, the potential to call forth in each of us the deepest of love. My dearest and precious children, live your lives with hope, faith, and love in your hearts, and you will touch the world. Never give up, because when times are darkest, that's when you will see the stars. Love, Dad. In November 2012, when we received the Level 4 Gold Medal, world-class honor, which was a tremendous, humbling experience, the reviewers, when they were on reviewing our agency, said to me, what legacy do you want to leave in your organization? And they told me to go and spend a couple of hours writing it out, and they would meet me at 4 o'clock in my office, and we would discuss it. And I looked at them and I said, what? What's he talking about? But I wanted to pass this test. Got to do something with it. So I wrote my legacy, and this is my legacy statement about my work. How I want to be remembered. I want people to know that life is more than work. I want them to deeply experience their career year as a time in their lives that contributed to their growth as human beings first, and as professionals second. I want them to remember that their time in this workplace was meaningful, rewarding, and growth-producing. I want people to have experienced acceptance, compassion, and a sense of belonging in their journey here. I want their time here to be a launching pad for their continuing journey. I want to leave a legacy of a nurturing workplace where people are free to use their gifts, support one another to the end of gaining greater work and life satisfaction. I want each individual in this workplace to realize how important they are. I want to leave behind changed lives, knowing deep within my being that in some small way, I have participated in the transformation of people. I want to remember that I meant and believed with every fiber of my being, however imperfectly I lived it, that people are precious. Mm. A long time ago, was a song that was written and recorded by Reba McEntire. It was called If I'd Only Known. Until 4 or 5 years ago, I didn't know who'd written the song. And I had the pleasure, when I was studying in California with Jack Canfield, to meet the songwriter, Jenna Stanfield. Jenna was beautiful. She sang the song, and I said, can I use the song in the seminar? She said, yeah, but use my version. But I've always used Reba's version. Don't tell her if you ever. But it's a beautiful song. But it talks about never missing out on an opportunity to tell someone you love. Because the song was written after she lost most of her members of her band in a plane crash. We have today. We're guaranteed today. We're not about tomorrow. Mm-hmm. We have people that we love. We have staff to care for. Let's recalibrate our hearts. Let's look after our staff. Look after our family. That's our calling as servant leaders. And my control went out. Is called If I'd Only Known.
I would hold your head like a lifeline to my heart underneath the thunder we'd be warm. It was my last night by your side. I pray a miracle stop the dawn.
Set your compass by the flash of lightning, set by the stars. Don't trust the sun, trust the shadows. Trust the sun, don't trust the shadows. Believe in your dreams, don't believe in your despairing thoughts. Have faith in your faith and doubt your doubts. Trust in your hopes, never trust in your hurts. Thank you very much.
Houston, we have a few minutes. Would you be open for a question?
Any other questions?
Yeah, Rick. I have a question. How do you, as an administrator, put together this beautiful way of thinking and honoring and respecting and caring for people with the times as an administrator you also have to protect the organization, people from each other, and make hard decisions that feel different than the approach you're describing. And we all wrestle with that, especially those of us who are in Christian organizations. I think doubly feel that, you know, someone has to be fired. Cuts, layoffs have to be made. Someone is really deteriorating the morale of the department. Lots of efforts have been made, but it's just not working. They're causing the department to deteriorate, and something needs to be done, and it can't just be the beautiful approaches you described, where you've tried those, and the person is just not functional enough for that to take hold. Something stronger potentially needs to be put into place. How do you bring the two together, or recognize that they're both part of our administrative responsibility? Or maybe I'm just assuming that, but I'd love to hear how you struggle with that.
That's a great question. I think it was after a seminar one time, they said to me, this is soft stuff. What about the hard stuff? I said, no, this isn't soft stuff. This is hard stuff.
Oh, yeah.
This is hard stuff. So you've got to fire somebody. Yes, you can do it respectfully, and you can do it without destroying your life. You can discipline somebody, and you have to sometimes, and I've had to. And I've had to fire people over the years. But you know what? I tried to do it in a way that didn't destroy their lives. And they went on, and many of them went on, and I found someone that somewhere where it was a better fit for them. So it was, in the long run, better for them. And we don't know what God has in store for people. Yes.
Let me just add to that, though.
Yeah.
What if the person is the leader and you're not the administrator above them?
You mean what if the leader needs to be fired?
That's what I just said.
Seriously.
I think
the administration above them to do it.
I think that's a real problem, because if the leader, especially if it's a very senior leader, and the culture of the organization will deteriorate, and sometimes it deteriorates to the point where there's a lot of hurt in the organization. The organization is less productive, and it's a real tragedy, and it happens. And I've often seen leaders who come after that, different kind of leaders, all told me, you know, the more compassionate, the more kind of servant leader, and they have a lot of healing to do after an organization like that. And that's tragedies that we see in Christian organizations and in corporate in the corporate sector all the time. And I'm working with a little organization now called New Vantage. And in this organization, we go into the corporate sector. And we know that if we can work with the senior leaders and the senior leaders gets it, it'll go down. But if the senior leaders doesn't get it, we've got a real problem.
So you're a consultant for that?
I am. You work hard. If the senior leaders don't get it, I don't go in. You know, and sometimes they don't get it because they don't understand it or because they never experienced it. And they're open to growing. If they're open to growing, it's fine. But if they're not,
There's a hard option to and I speak from personal experience because 2 days ago I resigned from an organization like that.
Wow.
That's the hard option. I mean,
yes,
it's, you know, we don't have to stay. We want to, but you don't have to stay. It is painful to do that. But
if some people have that option,
that's
a good option.
I mean, we all have that option.
It's a painful one, and it's an expensive one.
Yeah,
but
sometimes
it is the right one, and I'm grateful for my graduate school, which is Roberts Wesleyan in upstate New York, and they said sometimes the problem is not me. Sometimes the problem is the milieu of the organization, bureaucratic one. You cannot change it. And the option is to remove yourself and to not enable a negative organization. Eventually, I mean, like, there's power in that if enough people did quit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It sends a message. And even bureaucratic places can get it when enough people quit.
Yeah, there's also the possibility, though, that people up above have what it takes. They just don't quite get it. And
that's
so
right.
That's where you come in. And so pick your card.
those are things that we struggle with all the time. And sometimes the best option is to leave if it doesn't change, because God doesn't want our souls to get destroyed. And you know, you've all heard the expression, when the one door closes, another one opens. I think we have to trust that. Yes.
I just finished reading Joyce Kirk's book on Team of Rivals, which was Lincoln's. How do you build community when, like in Lincoln's situation, where you have five very strong, independent leaders and then bring them together? How do you build community when you see the need for servant leadership? Certainly Lincoln did, but that he takes these five personalities on his leadership team and brings them together. How do you become a servant leader to people who don't want to be servant leaders?
Well, I had a team when I started out over 10 years ago. They were, half of them were on the edge of burnout, and the other half were so cynical I didn't know where I was going to do with them. it was a long journey, and you can only do it gradually. Do it. One retired, which I, you know, God, that was a godsend. She was real toxic in our team, but slowly, you know, they came around, because there were enough people around them that was living this stuff, so it became a positive influence. Because, as I say, in an organization, there's a tipping point, right? So when enough people get this. And there's a tipping point, and it doesn't have to be, it may be a third of the people. Like in my organization, not everybody gets this, but there's enough of us now that get it, that it influences the culture. And so with leaders like that, that's what you got to do, man. You got to surround them with people who get it, so that, you know, they eventually get it as well.
And while you're doing it, you have to be brave.
Absolutely.
Yeah. God's got me inspired.
That's the one. Yes. Yes.
I wanted to get the author of the last poem that you read.
Robert Schuller.
Do you know the name of the poem?
I don't know. I'm sorry. It's from one of his books.
Are you going to put it in the
PowerPoint?
No, it might be. It might be in there. I'm not sure. I can take a look at that, but I'm not sure if I can ever find it again. But it's a quote from one of his books. Yeah. I mean, if you Google it, you'll probably find it. Trust the cloud. Don't trust the cloud. It's written. It's there's no title to it. But don't trust the cloud. Trust the sunshine. Robert Schuller. Google it. You'll probably find it. The beauty of the internet these days.
Yeah. Find it. Thank God for all the world.
Any other questions? Yes.
I read in your book years ago, you know, about people are precious, and I have really hung on to that. And I just want to thank you publicly for that. I think if you're Christian, you ought to have that kind of motto, but I think if you're a Christian social worker, you really ought to live it. I just, God said that.
Thank you for that.
And I love what you wrote.
Thank you very much.
And I quote you. With your name. But I forgot the PhD.
Thank you for that. Thank you very much. Any other? Yes?
What are some concrete steps for people who are new and making decisions as far as leadership?
Well, I think number, that's a really good question. Thank you for asking that question. I think number one is to live it. Because when you live it, people around you will notice what you are. And if you're a servant leader, I have a guy, I tell you, he's the furthest thing that you would think to be a servant leader, but he's a perfect sort of servant leader. He's my head of finance. And he used to be a Catholic, I guess, a Jesuit. And he got out and got married, and now he became a friend. And you know, I sit at a meeting, and he says, "Hugh, can I get your coffee? Let's get some coffee." And he does this for everybody. And people come into the office in the morning, he helps them. You know? And he can do it. He can get away with it. I can't do it, actually. But he can do it. He can get away with it. And people go by his office. They come and sit. They sit down. He lives it every day. And when you're in his presence, you feel valued. So I think the first step is to start living it, and then the second step, I would say, a practical step, is to surround yourself with others who want to live it as well.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And meet together. Strategize. You've got to spread it in the workplace. It works. It really works. Good question.
And
yes.
I want to add that NACSW is a place where you can find five people like that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You know, use this workshop or this whole weekend to find people that you can connect with. And I don't care if they're from another state. You know, ideally they're in your next door neighbor. But find people that you can connect with, that you can stay in touch with, that you can call them on the phone and say, "Look, I need prayer." And pray for them too. We can make a difference.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
We have Jesus Christ. You want to talk about a servant leader? There is none better. Right,
we have
you?
The creator of the universe that breathes in our direction.
Amen.
You know, what more power can we want, you know, or desire? So, yes, it's tough in organizations, but if we remember, we have the creator of the universe. All we have to ask, you know, the scriptures tell us we don't have because we don't ask.
We don't ask. Yeah.
And sometimes we ask too small.
Yes.
We ask, "Oh Lord, this is too much bureaucracy, so it'll never change." And I'll say, "God, I know you'll change this organization. I know it'll be a different organization a month from now, a year from now, 2 years from now. It'll happen. I've seen it happen. It's amazing." Yeah, we do. We have the creator of the universe living in our hearts.
And he wants to show himself up through us.
Absolutely.
Through us.
Absolutely. You know, and I wrote this letter to my kids. I mean, I want to give my kids. Now, God wants to give it to us. I mean, we have to ask. And we have to ask big. Not ask small. Don't play small with God. He's not a small God. He's a big God. Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you for joining us today for NACSW's Podcast of the Month featured selection. We hope you found today's session useful and that it will support your efforts to thoughtfully integrate Christian faith and social work practice. We also hope that you will consider participating in additional NACSW's activities and events, including NACSW's upcoming convention in the fall, our quarterly audio conference workshops that we offer at no cost to NACSW members, and which includes free CEUs accredited by the Association of Social Work Boards, our online continuing education program, and access to dozens of archived podcasts from the members section of our website. Also, we invite you to join NACSW's Facebook group or our Facebook fan page. For additional information about these and other NACSW benefits and services, you can go to our website at www.nacsw.org. Thanks again for listening in today to our podcast session today.